Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
All right, thank you, Carol. Welcome back. It's the second hour of the show, and a lot to get to this hour. And you know, one of these topics I'm going to half joke about, but I'm going to half be serious about. And there are implications for people if you drink out of aluminum cans, even maybe beer. Not to panic people, but John Daly tweeted something out. John's a columnist and an author. He works with Bernie Goldberg over at bernardgoldberg.com, and he wrote a piece called "The Crisis No One Is Talking About" in his Daily Grind online report, and I mentioned this over the summer, I think, one time, right before I was heading out to Las Vegas, and that'll kind of lead me into the next topic here. My friend who lives out there said, look, I've been in the stores, and there's no aluminum cans of Diet Coke, and I prefer Diet Coke in a can. John, I guess, is a Dr. Pepper guy, and there is an aluminum can shortage. I think there's really a shortage with a lot of things right now. I was at Pet Supplies Plus last week in Baldwin, and my buddy Simon, who is one of the managers over there, said he was even embarrassed. He couldn't get a lot of orders in for, and they have plenty. Don't get me wrong. Jeannie's listening to me right now. Don't tell people we don't have stuff. They have plenty of stuff, but they were down on some of the supplies, and I think that you have... You know, we know raw materials are in short supply. You got to wait for a long time. Even some of these other things may be shortages moving forward. So John's going to join me. Also, Robert Thompson. 50 years ago today, January 12th, 1971, I was just 6 years old. Actually, I wasn't even six yet. Just five and almost turning six. One of the most influential classic television comedies of all time, All in the Family, started on this date. And Robert Thompson, who has one of the coolest gigs I think in the country, teaches television and pop culture at Syracuse University, is going to join me here in just a few minutes. We also have an audio cut of the day before the end of the hour. And John Rooney, I chatted with John right before Christmas just about some stuff and some baseball things. He's going to join us this afternoon to talk about the virtual winter warm-up, which starts this Friday. It's all online, but there's some fun things that you can participate in. And, you know, they're doing the best they can over there at the ballpark. 308. So I started this, really, we kind of had a pilot episode that occurred right around Thanksgiving time. The holidays came, and it was just something that was an idea in the back of my small little mind, because I talk so much with my good friend who grew up here in St. Louis, Richard Niner. Rick went to Parkway West. He was class of 82. I was class of 83. We started in radio at the big 10-watt powerhouse KYMC way back then. And he went into having a real professional life and a career. And I had no life skills, so I stayed working on the radio. But we have these discussions all the time about politics and pop culture. We don't agree on a lot of things, and we're able to do it and still stay friends. So we turned this into a video project that we kicked off last week. We're going to do it at 11 a.m. on Tuesday mornings. Dave Klein is the moderator. Dave, we still haven't really nailed down a name for this thing. I had a listener yesterday that said, hey, how about you just call it Tuesdays at 11, Tuesday morning at 11, otherwise people tune in at night. That's the working title for right now. You need to come up with something, Klein. Come on.
I will get to work on it. I promise you that. But I kind of like that one.
Well, it tells you when it's going to be. I mean, it really is simple. But this was an example of what we did this morning. Now, we did have some technical difficulties because Rick's power went out and we lost the signal for a while and Klein had to step up. But what we do, here's the concept. We do 7 minutes on politics, seven on entertainment, 7 minutes on sports. So today, and you can watch the video on my Facebook page, the show Facebook page, the KMOX Facebook page. It's up on Twitter as well. You can see us sort of going back and forth. We started today with politics, and here's a little sample of that video, which is up there right now.
I'm going to ask you the question because the president actually made some comments this morning where he, again, seemingly has no clue about what happened last week and is in denial. Now, again, I think for four, maybe 5 years, there have been a lot of people out there, myself included, because I wanted to be on his side on the issues, that thought, well, you know what? Maybe this guy is going to kind of change his tune. It's not going to happen. So did you see those comments? And do you think that this is the last of the drama?
One, if you're referring to the comments where he kind of disassociated himself with any responsibility to what happened on Wednesday, those comments, yes, I briefly saw them. What do I think of them? I mean, really? I mean, I don't think there's anybody in America, unless you're in some sort of fog, that doesn't believe that what he said that day aggravated this crowd enough and instigated this crowd enough to go down to the Capitol and do what they did. So, again, anybody else would have done that. I mean, let's be real. If Barack Obama had done that 4 years ago, I hate to say it, they probably would have tied him up and lynched him right there on the spot. And that's crazy to say, but I somewhat believe it. So, do I believe this is the end of the drama? No, and I've discussed this with you. Every time Donald Trump has gone to a point by which we have said there is no way he recovers and does something worse. I mean, go back 4.5 years ago with the, the Access Hollywood comments. Who any other candidate would have been gone, out of their mind? I mean, what's his name on the monkey business, which he wishes he could have all those years ago. What was his name? Gary Hart wishes he could have got that pass. I mean, his election campaign pretty much ended that day. It was over and done. So I'm scared it's not over. I mean, I'm actually very concerned that it's not over.
There are a lot of people. Look, I'm getting a fair amount of pushback, and Bill McGurn wrote about this, I think, in the Wall Street Journal this morning. Look, there are a lot of people who voted for Trump, who supported him on the issues, who supported the Supreme Court justices, maybe even some of the folks who protested last week. They feel like a lot of the coverage of this is unfair. They go back, obviously, to what happened over the summer with the riots. And I think some of that is fair, by the way. But in this instance, It's a very unusual, maybe it's not unusual. There is no willingness to accept the horrific consequences. You know, some of these people who were there and who are pushing back right now, they were outraged when Officer David Dorn died here in St. Louis during a riot last summer. And Rick, I don't know about you, but I've watched videos now for 6 days, and I watched more this morning that I had not seen. It's horrifying what happened. Now, clearly, not everyone who was there was protesting. Same thing with over the summer. But you have to be willing to accept the responsibility of what happened here. And, you know, a lot of people are pointing toward the president. You know who's kind of getting off easy in all this? I think is Don Jr. Because if you go back to last Wednesday and you hear the audio of Don Jr., everyone's focusing on the president inciting. Boy, I'll tell you what, his son, in my opinion, I think Don Jr. incited more than the president.
Well, I agree, Rudy Giuliani. There's a lot of people that are culpable in this. I mean, you look around, and there's an awful lot. But what is amazing to me, and I think I might have tipped my hand on this, is, you know, I watched what happened on Wednesday night. And again, I told you, I'm not a avid viewer of one station. I watched Fox News the night of the election and discussed that with you as to what happened and thought it was interesting how they waited so long to kind of kindly finally admit or accept that Donald Trump had been president. I think partially it was so they could let the other news stations do it and they didn't have to take the blame of hopping out first. I think so. But, you know, to watch on Wednesday night And to think in the summer how people like Sean Hannity and other social media and television media people were just outraged by the events that happened during Black Lives Matters when, you know, the CVS got suddenly burned down and Karen wasn't going to be able to get her antidepressant medicine before the next morning's episode of The View, even though you can drive 1.3 miles down to the next CVS. And just listening to Sean Hannity just be reprehensible about what happened.
Well, that's where it kind of cut off. So that was from our video this morning with my friend Rick Niner in a video feature that we're doing every Tuesday at 11 o'clock. And all of a sudden his power, like the power to his entire house went out, which happened to me a few months back. You might remember I had to do the show from the parking lot of the Drury Inn at 141 and 44. But we're going to do that every week. We covered politics in that segment. Dave had a pinch hit a little bit while we were getting Rick back on the line. And then we went into entertainment and broke down a little sports in the NFL playoffs as well. So a little feature that you can find on my Facebook page, on the KMOX Facebook page, went out on Twitter earlier today as well. You know, the while we were playing back that particular segment, I noticed something, and I just want to comment on this, because you cannot, if you're on a different side right now and you have a different perspective, well, it's cancel culture. So Nick Searcy's been a guy that I've known for a long time. I would describe him as a friend. He was in Justified, in the show Justified. He's filled in for Rush Limbaugh at least on one occasion. But I got to know Nick a long time ago, and I loved what he was all about, and I think he's a great, great actor, and really someone that I was impressed with because he never backed away. So he is a conservative in Hollywood. He never backed away from his conservatism whatsoever. But he's a Trump guy and has been a Trump guy. We follow each other on Twitter. He's been a guest on the show many times, and he was at the rally last week, and he saw some of my tweets, and he insisted that because he was there, Antifa was responsible for what happened in the destruction. And he told me that, and I disagreed, and there were some exchanges that other people got involved in on Twitter. So I saw a tweet from Nick that came across here. And I think you do this every once in a while, people who have Twitter. You wonder if someone's followed or unfollowed. I thought, you know what? Nick responded last week. He didn't seem very happy. But I don't unfollow people just because I disagree with them. You know, if someone's going to harass me or something like that, then I'll block them and unfollow them. If it's someone that I follow and I'm just not interested in. But he decided to unfollow. And I guess that's where we are. I could offer him, I'm not going to battle with Nick Searcy. What am I going to tell him? But his notion that Antifa was involved in this is just nonsense. And I'm kind of embarrassed because Nick, of all people, who has stood up for law enforcement and patriotism and doing the right thing, he's blasted the left for their hypocrisy, is now doing the same thing. And that makes no sense to me. But that's kind of where we are in this country right now. And I don't know if we're going to get out of it anytime soon. It's 3:17.
The Mark Reardon Show, sponsored by Cantor Injury Law on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Boy, the way Glenn Miller played.
Songs that made the hit parade.
I was a young kid in the early 1970s, 50 years ago. Tonight, All the Family debuted. I was not even 6 years old. One thing I remember is, and I don't really think I had very much of an understanding of what was going on in this show at all when I was 7, 8, 9 years old, but I remember watching this show with my grandparents, All in the Family, and, you know, some of those classic 70s shows. And it's amazing. Robert Thompson is with me this afternoon from Syracuse University. I've always said, Robert, that you have one of the coolest gigs on the planet because you are a professor of pop culture, and you talk about all this fun stuff, television and pop culture. First of all, Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year to you, too. I'm doing just fine. How about you?
Good. You and I may have talked when they were doing, I don't know, a year and a half ago, a couple years ago, when they did the I don't even know what you would call them, the recreations of some of those classic episodes with modern-day comedians and cast members, but they used the same scripts.
Jimmy Kimmel and Norman Lear put those together, yeah.
And it was jarring to me just hearing, you know, if you never seen the show, it would really be jarring. But even if you've seen the show, you have a little perspective of what it was like in the early 70s. And you hear the language and the topics that they used 50 years ago. It's a little weird because it's almost like you don't hear that today, right?
Right. Yeah, it was Woody Harrelson as Archie Bunker. That was really strange. It. I mean, it was a 70s show. But I think I can say with confidence that of all the entertainment shows, not news or whatever, of all the entertainment shows in American television history, All in the Family has got to be the top most influential of all time. I mean, before that, we had a couple of shows like the Smothers Brothers and Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, but primarily we were coming off a decade of Flying Nuns and Talking Horses and Witches and My Mother the Car and all that kind of stuff that
yeah.
totally ignored what was going on in the real world and that we could see it on the news. And all of a sudden, this show comes out, totally changes that. Every episode dealt with some kind of contemporary issue, often controversial. There was minor swearing on it, which was a big stinking deal back then.
Yeah.
You didn't hear that. I remember being in the same room with my parents when that show was on and not knowing where to look because I was hearing this language that we'd never heard before. So it was, and then it was 5 years in a row number one, which means everybody else tried to imitate it. It totally changed television.
So here's something just for some perspective when you think about it. When All the Family debuted, it was, in my story, it says 9:30 on a Tuesday, but that had to be 8:30 Central Time here in this time zone. The Beverly Hillbillies, Green Acres, and Hee Haw were the lead-ins. And then, you know, think about sitting down for the first time to watch All in the Family, not really knowing what you're going to get, and you're coming off of Hee Haw. That's a little different experience, isn't it?
And that's interesting that because what CBS would then do, those shows were still big hits. Beverly Hillbillies, Green Acres, Hee Haw, Red Skelton, all those Mayberry RFD, the Andy Griffith spinoff. CBS would systematically cancel those shows over about two seasons and replace them with what became the new hits, but very different shows. Mary Tyler Moore earlier that season, then All in the Family mid-season in January, and then MASH in 1972. A total turnaround for CBS because they realized their demographic, their audience was getting older, and if they were going to appeal to younger people during this period, they were going to have to quit. Gomer Pyle was still on the air as we moved into 1970. That was about a Marine in the contemporary Marine Corps. Never once mentioned the fact that we were fighting
Vietnam.
A war in Vietnam, yeah. And that Marines were, of course, over there. It completely ignored it. Now, MASH didn't get too much better. MASH was about the Vietnam War, but it was set in Korea. It was disguised by being set during the Korean War. But CBS was moving, and All in the Family's success made that move possible.
Yeah, Norman Lear wrote in his autobiography, Even This I Get to Experience, he says, look, until that happened, to your point, there was no hunger in America, there was no racial discrimination that was portrayed, no unemployment, inflation, no war, no drugs, and people were, in theory, happy, according to the television version, with whomever happened to be in the White House. So they pitched that to CBS, and the networks admitted that they were looking for something different, but clearly, and Norman Lear admits, I don't think that they were looking for something that different, but it worked. How were the ratings for that show in the early days?
Well, it took a little while for people to kind of discover it, but it didn't struggle very long. I think by the first full season, it was number one, and it went number one 5 years in a row, which was the first time that had ever happened. It would happen again. The Cosby Show would tie it in the 1980s, but All in the Family was Nielsen top of the heap for five seasons in a row. And it went till 1978, and then there was a spinoff called Archie Bunker's Place when Gene Stapleton left the Edith role, and that took place in that bar that Archie had purchased. That never quite got the the traction. But let's remember the spinoffs. I mean, so Archie Bunker spun off the Jeffersons. It spun off Maude. And then Maude spun off Good Time. So All in the Family was actually the grandparent of the parent of Maude and the grandparent of Good Times. It became a franchise unto itself.
And that was the first full black family on television. Yeah, it's sort of like the coaching tree. You know, when you look at it, you got Good Times, the Jeffersons, Archie Bunker's Place, checking in because Marla Gibbs got her own sitcom as Florence. That one didn't last very long at all. Gloria, another one that was short-lived.
Oh, that really
was on
in 82.
Yeah, in 83. And here's one. I saw this listed today, and honest to goodness, I don't even remember this one. Have you ever heard of a show called 704 Houser from 1994?
Yes.
I don't even remember that one.
He moves into Archie's old house.
I don't remember. Maura Tierney was in that, John Ennis. Do not remember.
Very long, but it was an interesting idea. It just wasn't. It was instead of Archie, of course, was the bigot, and the son-in-law was the kind of liberal, almost hippie type. In 704 Houser Street, a black family has moved in. The dad is a good liberal, progressive, proud of it person, and the son has, of course, now the conservative, kind of like what Family Ties would do. But everything about you pointed out all those spinoffs that happened. Even Gloria got one. Even the baby, when Gloria and Meathead, as Archie always called them, when they had the child Joey. There was a Joey doll. I have one of these in my office. My students got for me. A Joey doll came out whenever it was, 1970, whenever the child was born. And in typical All in the Family fashion, it was the first anatomically correct male doll that had come off. And it came with a diaper and a bottle. And you could feed it and change its diaper. It would pee. But while you were changing your diaper, you realized that the thing actually had had parts. Barbie and Ken never managed that. Or at least Ken didn't.
That might be too much information, Robert Thompson.
But
that,
you know, that
is
it showed how that show... It was up until then, you were talking about how TV entertainment, it didn't do the war. It didn't do poverty. It didn't do racism and civil rights and all the rest of it. And it wasn't alone. We looked at our dolls, and they, like TV, didn't let husband and wife sleep in the same bed. Our dolls didn't let dolls actually have, actually look human. And the very fact that it was an all-in-the-family doll that changed that speaks volumes about what All in the Family was really all about.
I still call the toilet the turlet every once in a while in honor of Archie Bunker.
I used to call that first time he did that, I called it the flush heard round the world because, as many will point out, it was the first show that actually acknowledged that people went to the bathroom by, in fact, letting us hear that flush. You know, there was the National Association of Broadcast Code when All in the Family started, still precluded showing a toilet bowl on television, which is why, remember the old Tidy Bowl Man commercials? He was floating in the tank, not in the bowl, and it would make sense that he'd be in the bowl. That's what a Tidy Bowl is supposed to clean. The NAB code said that you weren't supposed to show toilet bowls, so they had him floating around in the tank.
Robert Thompson, I'm always envious of your gig at Syracuse University. This is great to remember All in the Family. Here's something you don't know, and, you know, you'll probably charge me for this, but oftentimes, here we are, you know, January 12th, your segments become best of segments for the Mark Reardon Show that we air at the end of the year, so we double dip a little bit. Please don't invoice me for that, Robert, if you would.
Oh, I'm honored. Thank you.
You have a great year, and I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Look forward to it. Thanks a lot.
Audio cut of the day coming up here before the end of the hour. We have Total Information PM at 4 o'clock, and John Reeves is going to join us. It's a bummer. We would be going through the winter warm-up this weekend. Sometimes I've done my show for the winter warm-up on Monday, but we won't have that. It's Martin Luther King Day. But there's a virtual warm-up, and John's going to join us at 4:20. We'll kind of get into some thoughts about the off-season with Mr. Rooney as well. Of course, every Tuesday and Thursday during the regular season and postseason, John joins us on KMOX 336. I saw a topic from John Daly yesterday on Twitter that I totally connected with. He's a columnist and an author, and he writes a column at the Daily Grind. He works with Bernie Goldberg at BernardGoldberg.com. He's been a guest on this show before. He's also the author of the Sean Coleman thriller series, but this is sort of off topic. But clearly, John Daly, you and I are concerned about a crisis facing this country, and we're going to make people aware of it because I think we have a common bond with different soft drinks and an addiction. Is that true?
This is true. I am a victim, and I believe you are as well, of the national aluminum can shortage.
Well, let me tell you how this started, and this is why your column grabbed me yesterday, because back in the summer, I was going to visit a friend of mine in Las Vegas, and he sends me a couple of pictures from grocery stores out there, and the shelves are empty when it comes to cans of Diet Coke. And he knows that I have an addiction to cans, specifically of Diet Coke, because people will say, John, well, what about a 2-liter bottle or plastic bottles? No. You don't understand. That's not the same. And I did a little research at the time, and in fact, there was this aluminum can shortage that was bubbling underneath the surface. So explain what's going on, because this is real. I know we're going to kind of have a little fun with it and joke around because you're a Dr. Pepper addict and I'm a Diet Coke addict, but there is a real aluminum can shortage, right?
There is. And I actually, you found out about it long before I did. I found out about it about a week ago after several weeks of sort of seeing the effects of it. But it goes actually all the way back to March due to the COVID-19 restrictions that started way back then. Breweries across the nation have had to close down their tap rooms, and they began shifting demand for their products over to packaging, you know, mostly cans, to get them onto store shelves. The same has been true of places that have soda fountains. You know, they can't sell them the traditional way because of those restrictions. So they've been working on these to-go models. And because of that, there's been a much higher demand for aluminum cans, and sort of the regular traditional supply chains have really felt the pinch. You know, that includes not just the grocery stores, but the convenience stores. And now it's not really all that uncommon to go in and try to find some cans of your favorite, and they're gone. And because so many people who were drinking out of cans can't do it anymore, they're grabbing the plastic ones too. So everything is kind of thinner on supply.
So I should know this, but John, where are you located? What city?
I'm in Greeley, Colorado. It's about an hour north of Denver.
So, and the reason I ask is because I've heard of some of this happening out west when it wasn't happening here with shelves being open. And maybe in part of this theory, and I don't know if there was something to this last year, but I didn't know if there was maybe a bottling plant or whatever you'd call it for the cans that were affected by the wildfires and things along those lines. I think maybe some of this is a combo deal. The other thing I remember is when I researched this initially is the big beer companies, for example, Anheuser-Busch and what's left of them here in St. Louis and Miller Coors and the big players, they were able to negotiate their aluminum cans, but it was the craft beers and some of the other folks that kind of got left out. And that's where the shortage really is right now.
Yes, that's my understanding as well.
So when you realize this
increased demand. Oh, sorry. Yeah, just the increased demand across the board is what it's now sort of affecting well beyond the craft breweries.
So how was this brought to your attention? You go in and you're trying to buy some Dr. Pepper, and then a clerk brings this to your attention?
Yeah, so we've been doing not every time, but we've been trying to do our grocery store offers the free service where you can order online and then you can go pull up behind the store and they bring it out to you. And a lot of people have been doing that just so they're, you know, there's not as many people in the store and risking spread. So, yeah, it just the past, you know, twice in a row we had gotten the out of stock marking on just regular cans of Diet Dr. Pepper. We usually get the 12 packs and, you know, I didn't think much of it at first, and then I would go to my gas station by my house and try to get some there instead, and they would be out, and it started happening. It started with the Diet Dr. Pepper. I started seeing it then with Diet Pepsi, some of the other stuff. It kept getting worse and worse. I had to get caffeine-free Diet Pepsi one day.
Oh, my goodness.
Pointless.
That's the worst.
You know,
yeah.
I'm a writer, and the caffeine helps me sort of keep my energy going and be able to write well. And I was falling asleep by 8:30 that night, you know, so that was not a good thing. But, yeah, a cashier at one of the gas stations finally just kind of threw it out there because we were talking about, man, you guys haven't had this, you know, sort of this pop in a while. And then she said, yeah, she brought that to my attention, and I started looking into it and learned more about it.
Yeah, you know, I've joked about my Diet Coke addiction for years, and if you go to my Twitter bio, I'm a self-confessed Diet Coke addict. And it's amazing, John, because I haven't had any alcohol since 1990. I also quit some other substances that may or may not have been illegal from, you know, my days in the 1980s. And there have been short stretches where I've stopped drinking, you know, Diet Coke, and when you get sick, you don't have a taste for it. But honestly, and I've never really tried to commit to doing it, you know, just saying, okay, I'm going to quit this stuff, because you even admit in your column, okay, fine, it's not good for us. I get that. Probably drink too much of it. But I don't know if I could stop drinking Diet Coke in cans unless they completely take it away from me, which maybe that's eventually what's going to happen.
Yeah, it really is sort of a sickness. You know, I said that in the piece too. And the cans, you know, they're the sort of the perfect size. I think there is a different taste, you know, with the cans that I like.
There is, yeah.
But yeah, when you like you mentioned, when you sort of try to stop drinking it for a while, you get those withdrawal headaches and you have no energy. And it's all because of the drugs in there. But it's tough. It's tough to get off that. And I know I should, but you know, I still haven't.
Well, and then the thing that caught my attention, and I don't know if I'd seen this elsewhere, but you're saying that some of this stuff might not even sort itself out with the can shortage. And by the way, I think there's a lot of other things that we're going to discover in 2021 where there's a shortage, but maybe not until next year.
Yeah, they're saying not until 2022, and that's just, you know, it's not that we've been able to find it at a few other places, so it's not like I'm totally out of sorts here, but yeah, it's becoming harder and harder for sure.
Well, John, I appreciate coming on here and talking about an important crisis that is facing our nation with the aluminum can shortage, which when I saw it yesterday, I thought, oh, I got to latch on to this, because I do think that there are people like you and I out there that, you know, because I find people all the time that have the same opinion of the cans and the taste in the cans as I do. I went to a place a couple of weeks ago, and it was a restaurant, ordered some sushi, and I'm in there just grabbing my food, and it was a pickup order, and I see that they have a little refrigerator, and I noticed a can of Diet Coke, and I was kind of hankering for one, so I said, hey, can I, you know, get that can of Diet Coke? And I noticed it sort of looked like it was a different color can, but I, you know, thought it was the lighting in the store or in the restaurant. So I get it out, I pay for it, I get it out, and I open it up. I even said to him, I think, and it was so darkly, I said, is that caffeine free? Because I didn't want caffeine free. No, regular. I'm like, okay. So I pop it in the card. Not only was it caffeine free, but it was caffeine free from, I believe, 2017. Maybe 2018,
nice.
Because they had the time. It was, that was not a good thing at all. Not a good thing at all to taste. John, take care, and our best to Bernie Goldberg. I'm hoping to get Bernie on this week, maybe to get some of his thoughts on what's happening in the Capitol. Notice I avoided that with you. I'm trying to get away from it, John.
Oh, that's okay. We could use a break for sure.
All right. Take care. We'll talk soon. 3:44 at the Voice of St. Louis. And, you know, I'm going to kind of break the promise here just a little bit, because I thought this was pretty good. The one of the correspondents for The Daily Show, and I sent this to Dave a little earlier this afternoon. I was going to use this for Cut of the Day, but let's use it right now because I got some other stuff maybe that's more important for that. Jordan Klepper is his name. And he's – now, look, I love it when we play the audio. Conservative media types go out there and they take microphones when a bunch of left-wing wackos are out there protesting, and they get them to say stupid stuff. I've always followed the rule that what's funny is funny, and if something's funny, it's funny. And this is actually relatively funny, if not frightening, when you think about what's about to happen, because Jordan Klepper's out there before all the real violence takes place, and he's talking with some of the Trump supporters. Here's a little sample.
We do not consent to be governed.
Nor shall we ever be consented to be governed by an illegal, fraudulent election.
But you elected a guy who also doesn't care much about consent.
We do not consent.
Will you accept Joe Biden as President of the United States on the 20th?
No, I will not accept the narrative. No, I will not. So look, what I've educated myself about this, okay? I don't know all that's in the Constitution.
Have you read it? It's pretty short.
The Constitution of America?
Yeah.
I've not read the whole thing, no. Sure. You've read the entire thing?
Yes, it's remarkably short.
All right. I doubt that, but it's okay.
You should read it, because you might be committing a seditious act in an hour and a half.
Okay, I'm not going to comment about that.
If people didn't vote for Joe Biden, though, the Dominion system voted for Joe Biden.
Do you think it's possible that Hugo Chavez infiltrated the Dominion systems, changed the votes orchestrated by Joe Biden?
I think anything's possible.
Do you think it's possible that a president who never pulled above 50% lost the election and is sore about it?
Absolutely not.
That's not possible.
That was one of the things I've really never addressed. But think about that for people who think the election was stolen. Now, look, it's the Electoral College. We get it. It's done by the states. But he did lose by 7 million votes, although I guess maybe some people think that millions of those were manufactured. I'm not exactly sure. The Constitution is sort of a relatively quick read, so it wouldn't be too tough for that guy to handle. Here's a little bit more Jordan Klepper.
And for those supposedly caught off guard, claiming they didn't see this violence coming, if you paid attention to any of these rallies, all you have to do is open your eyes and ears. The message isn't exactly subtle.
Make no mistake, we have the guns, and we are now in the streets. We are gonna clean this place out one way or another. You look down there, I have 1 million plus people angry. Very, very angry people.
Can I ask why you're carrying a pitchfork?
Well, a pitchfork is it's just an iconic representation of what people over time have done in this country.
It feels more like a weapon, to be quite honest.
No, it's not. It's farm equipment, and it's legal in this city.
Yeah, are you farming today?
It's a representation. We're not asking for violence right now.
I gotta tell you, from the movies I've seen, the hordes of people with pitchforks are usually the bad guys.
How close do you think we are to 1861?
Seriously. But hang on.
Are we close?
Hell yeah, you are.
That's the Civil War.
Would you rather die on your knees than be free?
Aren't you a little bit freaked out about 600,000 Americans die? I see you're not wearing masks. Never mind.
He tried, but all those people were not Antifa. That's something else I want to, you know, just mention there. And the guy who dragged the lectern out, Nancy Pelosi's lectern, he's now been charged with a crime, and this was interesting. Even his attorney, Dan Eckert, can't really come up with a defense.
Part of what you have to, you know, factor into is, again, you just have to drill down on what actually happened. You have a photograph of our client, you know, in a building, you know, unauthorized to be there with, you know, what appears to be a podium or a lectern. I'm not exactly sure which one it is called, but that's what we have.
Obviously, that presents problems for you as a defense attorney in that you have your client in the building at the time of the break-in.
I don't know how to else explain that, but yeah, that would be a problem. I'm not a magician, and neither is Mr. Bigney. So yeah, we've got a photograph of our client who would appear to be inside the federal building or inside the Capitol with government property.
I would fire that attorney because, look, aren't attorney, this is like law school 101. My client is innocent, and when the facts come out of this case, even though he's carrying the lectern, he'll be found not guilty. 349.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Cut of the Day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. The president actually made some comments today, the first since last week's recorded robotic comments, where he sort of finally conceded the election. And in this particular case, I guess I shouldn't be stunned, completely oblivious to police officers being dragged and people being beaten, hang Mike Pence, cheers, all these things. And here's what he said today.
What is your role in what happened at the Capitol? What is your personal responsibility?
So if you read my speech, and many people have done it, and I've seen it both in the papers and in the media, on television, it's been analyzed, and people thought that what I said was totally appropriate. And if you look at what other people have said, politicians at a high level, about the riots during the summer, the horrible riots in Portland and Seattle and various other places, that was a real problem, what they said. But they've analyzed my speech and my words and my final paragraph, my final sentence, and everybody to the T thought it was totally appropriate.
I'm not familiar with one person who thought it was totally appropriate myself. Chuck Schumer, who is going to be the new majority leader in the Senate, which kind of makes me sick to my stomach a little bit, and I think I just threw up in my mouth, condemned it. But then he said something stupid today as well. Big shocker.
Ahead of the concern for possible future attacks, and with the law on our side, we are to say that these insurrectionists, many of whom are known to be at large, should not be able to hop on a flight. We are here today because the folks, the people, the insurrectionists who breached the U.S. Capitol fall under the definition of threats to the homeland and should be immediately added to the TSA no-fly list. We are calling on the authorities, the FBI, the TSA, any of those who are inside the Capitol should be placed on the no-fly list and not be allowed to fly.
Yeah, that sounds like that's going to work. I'm fine with putting true domestic terrorists and the people who are responsible for this and found guilty and when we have proof on a no-fly list, but I think Senator Schumer is getting a little ahead of himself, but it's going to play well given the climate that we're in right now. 356, those are your audio cuts of the day this afternoon on KMOX. Total Information PM is coming up next.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.